Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foley, and another annual tradition, the Selection Sunday Reaction Show. And we begin, as we always do, with NCAA Committee Chair Matt Colagiovanni. Mr. Colagiovanni, appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks, Terry. Really appreciate it and looking forward to talking lacrosse with you tonight.
No doubt. Well, this is not your first rodeo with this particular conversation. So let's begin where the attention most squarely does in establishing some of the takeaways from the room. Who was the last team in and who was the first team out?
I would say the last team in was Yale and the first team out was Maryland.
Okay. Really helpful and in line with what my expectations and analysis were. And we'll come back to that in a little bit. But I do want to start and go into a little bit deeper detail with Duke. Certainly one of the teams that has garnered the most attention and conversation over the last 2 weeks, specifically with respect to their non-conference strength of schedule. Can you characterize the committee's conversation when it came to Duke's strength of schedule overall and particularly how they scheduled outside of the conference?
Sure. The one thing I would want to mention is that we really looked a deep dive at, we had a cluster of about four teams. Mm-hmm. It was Duke, Maryland, Yale, and Harvard. So we kind of spent a lot of time looking at them. In reference to Duke overall, we looked at their nine wins, obviously, their full body of work, average loss being a five, obviously their RPI being a 10. We looked at that. We took some consideration of what the coaches, the RAC, considered and where they put them from their end. So overall, we looked at that body of work when it came to them. And, again, we did a lot of looking at it a lot with the other teams. So we spent a bunch of time today and last night looking at those programs.
One of the elements of this conversation, and it came up on the broadcast of the Ivy League championship game, was the relationship between outcomes and incentives. And my question is a broad one, which is, as a committee, do you consider it part of your responsibility to evaluate how your decisions based on the data set that's put in front of you could potentially inform future incentives? Specifically, is there any concern that effectively, quote unquote, rewarding Duke for the choices that they made in scheduling could potentially create similar incentives for teams to make similar decisions going forward?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think a lot of it depends on how many wins they have. And you do a really hard schedule and you don't win the games, that may not help you. So I think it's the overall, body of work and where they finish. And sometimes you can't help. You might schedule a team a year or two out that is really, really good. And then they fall down the road and then you get the win, but they're, out of the top 20. So I think it just varies. And, each year you can kind of see it evolving differently.
Moving into the seeded teams, there was a little bit of a deviation from the RPI order in seeding North Carolina at number three and Richmond at number four. Can you characterize that decision?
Yes, we spent some time on that. We went back and forth. We kind of looked at where we thought they should go, and at the end of it, we kind of felt like UNC just they just had for their overall body of work with what they had from, their top 20 wins, what they did throughout the year, their strength of schedule, obviously, being a two. So we just kind of felt like overall looking at that, they just had a little bit of an advantage. But we did spend a bunch of time looking at that because obviously Richmond also has an impressive schedule.
No doubt. Continuing on in a similar vein, bumping Virginia, I believe their RPI was seven to the five seed, and then equivalent flip with Cornell in the opposite direction. Can you characterize what underpinned those decisions?
Absolutely. I feel like, Terry, you were in the room with us. We were going over all this stuff earlier today. It's pretty great. We looked at Syracuse, obviously, winning seven games, top 20 wins, strength of schedule three, average loss four. You can look at Virginia, obviously, what they did today with winning, their strength of schedule being one, two wins against Notre Dame. So we kind of went through all of that. Again, Cornell, very, obviously very impressive overall, but when we did that, we kind of just felt like the other two teams, it was so close, but we kind of felt like they kind of just took the advantage, from that ranking when we were doing the final bracket.
The kind of last of these forms of questions or types of questions really kind of falls at that hinge point with the last team that got the opportunity to host a first round matchup, that being Penn State. Obviously, their circumstances were probably a little bit different insofar as the team that they were clustered by being Johns Hopkins, a team that they beat on Saturday. Was there another team in the mix to potentially be the 8 seed?
We really were kind of locked in on those two guys. We did look exactly like you said, as I've mentioned on some of these other ones, looking at Penn State just really had impressive top 20 wins when you look at them. Hopkins was really good too, but we just felt like those were the two, and we spent some time looking at what they did for the full body of work, and just felt like at the end, obviously Penn State winning the conference, kind of just all of that put him a little bit over the edge.
I'd be remiss not to ask about Penn State's three non-top 20 losses because, again, preparing for all the bracket analysis and prognosis, one of the elements of this was that there were a handful of historical outliers, right? And if Duke hadn't added another top 20 win, there was no record of a team being selected for an at-large berth with a single top 20 win. So as a result, became no longer historical, right? Maybe a little bit rare. It'd been since 2018 that we had had a team with only two top 20 wins get selected as an at-large. And in this instance, we actually had two because Yale also falls into that category. But that being said, we've never had a team get selected, or I'm sorry, get seeded with three non-top 20 losses. So it didn't become a consideration after Penn State won the AQ, but was it a part of the conversation when it came into how much are we going to kind of ding their resume for those losses?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been something we looked at. I mean, obviously, you mentioned some of the other teams if they didn't have their top 20. So we do those scenarios when we're in the room. So we're looking at, if they didn't get that win and they didn't do it with their strength of schedule and their average wins, average losses, yes, it could have affected it. But fortunately, it went this way for them, with them winning it all in the conference.
So then I guess just kind of to round out the conversation, we'll go back to where we start, which was the analysis and the determination between Yale and Maryland. How do you characterize the way in which you made the choice between those two resumes?
I would say those are the two we probably spent, the most time with, looking at. It was obviously really challenging because Maryland had a really difficult schedule. Ultimately, it probably came down to one more win for them. They obviously had a gauntlet of a schedule, but when you look at, where Yale was, we just kind of felt, they had the 9 wins. They had a very good, average loss. Strength of schedule was a little bit more in favor to Maryland, but overall, when you look at where they were, it's tough with, two really tough teams, but Maryland, we kind of felt like it was probably one win away.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Johns Hopkins head coach Peter Milliman, whose Blue Jays are back in the NCAA tournament, heading to Cornell, an institution that he knows well, to take on the Big Red in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Coach Milliman, first of all, congratulations on qualifying for the Big Dance. What are your thoughts?
Excited to be playing.
Coming off of a Big Ten tournament in which you had a bye in the quarterfinals and then took care of business against the Michigan Wolverines in the semifinals, disappointing showing against Penn State. What's the message for the team as you try to reset and refocus?
I mean, we had a great week of practice. I thought, we did that going into the tournament. Obviously some shake up in the lineup and things like that over the weekend, and we didn't perform as well as we wanted to on Saturday. But we're still alive. We got a chance to compete again. That's the most important thing for us. We want to earn some more time, and we just got to get back out on the practice field, dig in.
So you mentioned some of those changes to the lineup. One of the notable ones was the absence of Quentin Kilrain, who sustained a pretty serious looking injury. Any opportunity for him to potentially return to the lineup this season?
I think it's a possibility. I don't know, any specifics more than that. He's a big piece of the puzzle, but we need his voice and his leadership more than anything. And we just have to take that next step and what we're doing on a day to day. And I think the guys are ready for that. They're excited about the opportunity. They want to compete together, and we get another chance to do that this week.
Turning the attention going forward, I mentioned your familiarity with Cornell. It was the institution that you were the head coach at before coming to Homewood. Obviously, nobody on that roster that you coached, but handful of guys that you did recruit either to the Blue Jays, or I believe maybe one or two still on the roster for the Big Red. And then certainly a lot of familiarity with the staff, having worked with at least three of the head coach and assistant coaches. What do you know about this team, and how does that inform how you're going to prepare?
You know, I got some familiarity with the staff for sure, and with the institution, but you know, it's more about the Blue Jays and what we need to do to get ready. You know, I think there's some traditional aspects of the way Cornell competes, and we're going to try and, you know, learn as much as we can about that. But, you know, really it's about who they are right now and this year. I mean, they won a national championship last year, but it's a different team this year. So, you know, we got to dive into the film. We don't have a ton of common opponents, and I haven't seen them very much in the last year or two, but, you know, we got to get into the film. We got to start to break it down and see what it's going to take to be successful on Saturday.
So we've talked a little bit about this past weekend. We've talked a little bit about the weekend coming up. To like zoom out a little bit and think about, you know, the season in a little bit more totality. It's been an incredible year from the standpoint of, you know, some of the highlight moments, such as the comeback against Virginia. And then, you know, the complimentary lacrosse that you've been able to play at times in terms of the defense picking up for the offense picking up for the defense, and and then certainly you know, an ability to continue to fight and scrap at the faceoff X in order to try to spread out and even out the possession battle. One of the things, one of the places that my mind goes, particularly having been in attendance at the Maryland game, is just how important, you know, this senior group is, especially because it's not that big in terms of the number of contributors, and how much of that falls on Matt Collison. From an opportunity to, you know, further cement his legacy as a Blue Jay, what are your thoughts on what his mindset will be going into the postseason?
You know, there's a lot to that question. I'll start with Matt. You know, he's a phenomenal player. He's one of the best I've ever been around at this level. I think he's, you know, he's a special young man. He's as committed and as hardworking, and he's a, you know, a dedicated Blue Jay. He wants to be successful in every way. He wants to be a part of a team that wins championships. He doesn't care about accolades or achievements. He's looking for, you know, team success. So, you know, that's what I'm supportive of. That's what I'm excited about. That's what, you know, he leads with. You know, we always need to find ways to get Matt more involved and, you know, get as many touches as possible. Teams key on him so much, though, we can't overdo it. Otherwise, we lose a lot of the value of, you know, how we blend him in with the rest of the group. So, you know, that aside, you know, Matt's a part of a pretty special senior class as well. You know, a team that, you know, is going to go as far as our seniors take us. Those guys have, you know, big hearts. They care a lot about black and blue, and they want to put everything they can into this. And so, you know, there's more contributors than just the ones you see on the game field. There's some tremendous leaders and teammates in that group. And I think they're excited to, you know, be together for another week. We've had some ups and some downs in a season, like you do a lot. But we've put ourselves in position to have another week together. And, you know, this is a big part of our success is, you know, the integrity of the group and the connection, the strength of that connection. And that's what really is leading us right now.
I want to close by talking about the other end of the field, because the way in which Orange Linus has once again stepped in after not being the starter at the beginning of the season and provided a lot of steadiness at that end of the field, the way in which Luke Martin has shown so much versatility, and obviously, you know, coming on and playing less than 100% and showing out for his teammates. And then for me, Carson Brown, and the way in which he has emerged as, you know, a really premier number one defender. Can you talk about the unit and the cohesion and those three guys in particular?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a tremendous group you just mentioned. We have a lot of faith in them. You know, Coach Kester does as good of a job as I think there can be done in leading a defensive group and building a cohesion. Like you mentioned, I think that group plays better as the sum of their parts than they do as individuals. And I think that's a big piece of the way we play. You know, it has to be coordinated, it has to be choreographed, and it has to be, you know, done with a lot of detail and a lot and effectively. And so, you know, Carson's been improving on a week to week basis. It seems like he's had, you know, every tough matchup that we can think of throughout the year. You know, Luke's versatility, he was even starting as a short stick at some point early on in the year, played a lot of pole, and then we just needed to put him in a close early on. And he, you know, solidified. He plays as hard as anybody I've ever been around. Oren is about as level-headed of a goalie as I can reference right now. He was in the lineup last year after not starting the season. Had a tough fall with some injuries, came out as the backup for the first few games and then stepped in. He's just steady. He's not a guy that gets rattled by the environment and the situation, but I think he's always excited about being in the net, which is kind of what you're looking for out of those guys.
No doubt. Coach Millman, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck and safe travels to Ithaca. Look, can't wait to watch the Blue Jays take on the Big Red.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Stony Brook head coach Anthony Gilardi, whose Seawolves are fresh off of a CAA championship with a win over the Towson Tigers on Saturday. Coach Gilardi, first of all, we are so excited to hear your voice. Congratulations.
Thank you. Coach's voice, long weekend.
No doubt. All right, before we get into it, your team, what a bunch of Warriors. What a bunch of Lions. I'm just going to clear out and give you the opportunity to sing their praises.
Yeah, it was a great group. And I think we got going, and that was like old school CAA lacrosse. It was two physical games, and I thought our guys did a great job just being tough and taking the blows and just, kind of doing all the little things.
One of the elements of that game was you had to withstand a really kind of serious, kind of hard comeback from Towson. How do you describe the nerves in the fourth quarter and the way in which your guys answered the bell?
Luckily, we were up 6 goals, that's for sure. I mean, when Mikey Weishaus started taking over, we were definitely concerned. And then when he banked that one shot in, we had to call a timeout and just settle everyone down and just be like, guys, relax. He's really good. We're really good. We got a lead. We're just going to continue to grind this thing out. And we got that big goal to make it 13-10, and we just felt like that was kind of icing the game away.
One of the things that helped ice the game away was Tommy Wilk. Absolutely unbelievable 17 saves and a couple of really highlight reel ones there late. How do you describe what your goaltender did for you?
Tommy's great, man. He played great the night before. I think he had 16 saves against Drexel. But in that game, he's one of those kids that just nothing bothers him. He's in there. He lets a goal in. He makes a save. You would not know the difference. And he was locked in. And he's a Maryland kid. To be able to do it in Maryland, he had a ton of family and friends there. So he was really excited and obviously a huge part of the reason why we won.
Speaking of familiarity with the area, that was a place that you spent a long time as an assistant coach. You won a conference championship against an opposing head coach who you worked underneath for a really long time. How do you describe that element and the emotion that it kind of offered?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Obviously, yeah, I've been saying it a lot. Coach Nads is like family. So anytime you compete against your big brother, you want to knock each other's heads off. But the moment the whistle blows and the game's over, I mean, it's just nothing but love. And the things that we said, obviously, is really personal. And so if you have to lose to somebody, I think we both feel the same way. You'd like it to be you lose to him or he loses to me. But it's a special place. And it was really special to get my first, CAA championship with this group here there at Towson.
In an effort to continue to try to make you cry, although I'm not sure that we'd be able to tell the difference, when you reflect on just the multi-year journey of it, right, and how many times you've continued to hammer away at the grindstone, and what is it? How do you reflect on what this means with respect to culmination, validation, vindication of everything that you've tried to put in place since you arrived at Stony Brook?
Yeah, it's been a long journey. Our first 2 years, we had COVID. And our first year gets cut short. We're 5-2 and the world shuts down. The next year was like terrible. You couldn't be around the kids. And then we changed leagues and we're, the last team ever probably to get banned from postseason play. We would have been the number 2 seed going into our conference tournament. And then we play the CAA championship our first year and lose. And then we have a million injuries. And then we play a bunch of freshmen, the next year. So it's been wild. But this group has stuck together. And the freshmen and sophomores became juniors and seniors. And sophomores and juniors, I mean. And the leadership has been unbelievable. And I think it definitely validates just the process of sticking to the plan. you know, we didn't deviate. We didn't like, oh my God, reinvent the wheel. It's just continue to get a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit cleaner. And you know, even this year, we're 0-3 to start. And the guys stuck to it. They didn't think twice about it. And then we, you know, we've been fortunate to win 10 of the next, you know, 12 games. So it's been a fun ride.
Turning the attention forward, I have yet to see it. Maybe we can break some news. You guys play Marist in the play-in game that feeds into Princeton on Wednesday. Do you know what time that game is by any chance?
Just found out, 7 p.m. at Marist.
There you go. How do you think your boys are going to be feeling about the opportunity to go get some Red Foxes?
I think obviously we played them earlier in the year, a couple weeks ago actually. So we're familiar with them. They get a ton of Long Island kids, so it's going to be a battle. But our kids are just excited to be together. Man, we have such a special group. The bus ride home, we had a little team meal in the office before we were watching the selection show. And, you know, everyone's just laughing and loves to be around each other. So we're definitely excited to get back to work tomorrow, practice and our Monday practice and get ready for Wednesday night.
Well, we know you got a short turnaround and it's getting late. So we'll get you back to it. Good luck with that voice.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Jacksonville head coach John Galloway, whose Dolphins are in the NCAA tournament. Thanks to a 16-7 ASUN championship game victory over Air Force on Sunday. And boy, oh boy, Coach Galloway, have I been waiting to do this phone call. Thanks so much for joining.
No, thank you for taking the time and thank you for having us.
Of course. Well, so first, you know, I want to get to what the moment means for you and means for the program, but I don't want to give short shrift to the performance that your team put in today, a 9-0 first quarter. I can't imagine that you were expecting it. So how when it just started to set in as reality, what did it feel like?
Yeah, you know, I really didn't expect it. Obviously, Air Force has had such a fantastic conference run, and the game was so emotional. It had so many, you know, ties to it for our guys. I think some of the stressors of not getting over that hump over the past few years, and we really just tried to focus on being vehicles of joy. And I thought our guys did a good job in warmups, but obviously they exceeded the expectations in the first quarter, and obviously we were able to hold on long enough to be able to get out with a win.
You mentioned the kind of lingering sense of we've been here before, but and it hasn't gone our way. How did you try to manifest what's happened in the past has no effect on what's going to happen today?
Yeah, that's exactly what we talked about last week, that the history of what's happened in this program is not our baggage, but it is our education. It's our information to be able to right some wrongs and try to take the weight off of our guys' shoulders and recognize that, you know, this was not going to be a story that's been written based on what previous teams have done. And I think just their humility and gratitude, you know, we just talked about you can't be stressed and grateful at the same time. And if we're really grateful about this chance to win a championship on our home turf as the one seed, to give ourselves a chance to have more time together, well, maybe that's worth more focus than worrying about what, you know, last year's team did or 2022 or 2018. And I think we try to shift our focus and allow our guys to have hopefully a fresher perspective.
So once the final whistle blows and it's clear that you've climbed this mountain, what does it feel like?
Still navigating that emotion for sure. I think for our guys, obviously pure elation. And what was cool is I was able to really kind of step back and watch our guys enjoy that moment that they've deserved. I mean, I don't know if I took over one huddle at that point in the game. It was our leaders, our seniors, and you know, our 60 alumni storming the field after the game, bringing them into the locker room after. I mean, there's a lot of places I think maybe alums would be envious that this was the team that finally did it, but those guys shared in the joy that our guys had. And yeah, it was cool to be able to just step back and watch those guys have their moment.
How do you feel in terms of yourself? I mean, you said you're still coming to terms with it, but obviously as a head coach, this is, you know, a step in the journey and it's something that you've been striving toward. How do you think about it in the context of what it either vindicates or validates based on the approach that you've taken in terms of trying to get to this moment?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been 10 years here and, you know, there's been a lot of ups and downs and certainly questioning what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? And, you know, it's so much about our staff and the calmness they've given me, and the joy that I've had this year, just finding to have fun with our guys and allowing them to navigate their own leadership styles. And it's just, you know, I think back to 10 years ago, what I wish I knew then that I know now, and I'm still learning every day. But just to have more time with these guys, I'm incredibly grateful. And it's kind of taken away from the anxiety of what could be if we don't get the job done. So finding some perspective in that, but certainly soaking in this moment too, because it has been a long time coming, and one that our administration gets a lot of, I hope, a lot of credit for, as well as obviously the program and all the alumni before us.
In terms of your team, for folks that may not be as familiar, Jack Taylor, an 80-point scorer and the hub of the offense, Drew Rippien has tilted the field for you guys, certainly did so with his face-off performance today. Who are some of the other guys that have contributed to this team getting to a 10-5 regular season?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously Jack and Drew in the middle of the field, but also in the middle of the field, you know, Ryan Delarocco. I mean, I think he was coming into the game. He was number one or number two in goals against in the country, top five in save percentage. Today wasn't maybe what you would consider his best game, but I think our defense was a part of that. I think he only had to make four or five saves. I think, you know, at the defense, Aaron Toguri has been tasked with, you know, the number one matchup the past couple of weeks and covering guys like Steins and Driggs today and Duffy earlier on in the season. I mean, he's been, well, you know, experience. He started every game in his 4 years here at Jacksonville, and his experience is paying dividends at this point. And you know, I think our rope unit, that's where we live, and Braden Harrison at the short stick D mini position and Lucas Frazier at the LSM position, those two guys are our heart. You know, the rope unit is our heart, along with Charlie DeGennaro, captain. So those are the guys that we're gonna lean on, and that's the leadership group too that's gonna have to put our team in a position to get ready to go back to battle on Wednesday.
And that's a perfect segue. Robert Morris in the playing game that feeds into Notre Dame. Where are your thoughts when it comes to the Colonials?
You know, we've been fortunate to have experience with them, obviously, when they were in the A-Sun. You know, our season actually ended there in 2023, and that was when our seniors were freshmen. And that was part of the conversation after the game already, was the dialogue of what that game meant to them and the lessons that they learned. And it's a perfect chance for us to turn the page and focus on what's in front of us. And I've been fortunate enough to be in this tournament a few times as a player, and there's a different emotion that comes with it. And I know that our guys will feel that type of emotion come tomorrow at our first meeting.
John Galloway, really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations again.
Thanks, Terry. I appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Army head coach Joe Alberici, whose Black Knights are back in the NCAA tournament after a Patriot League championship game victory on Sunday over the Loyola Greyhounds, 14-7 in Mikey Stadium in West Point, New York. Coach Alberici, congratulations on the victory. How are you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling great, Terry. Thanks for the little insights there with the Army at over your alma mater there, buddy. I'm sorry, but great win for the guys.
It was an impressive win, and it was one that I had seen the regular season version of, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and you know, came away from that honestly impressed by the progress that and growth that Loyola had made over the course of the last year or so, but more than that, just very solidified in what was a really interesting impression or moment, opportunity to evaluate this Army team, because obviously you were so talented last year and graduated a ton of meaningful contributors, but still brought back so much talent that the opportunity to see in person and really feel the physicality gave me a really good sense for what you were capable of. And so I can imagine that for a team that, you know, had fallen short in the Patriot League tournament the last couple of years, the opportunity to control your own fate and know that you were going to have a pretty luxurious 9:30 p.m. Sunday evening selection show watch, where it was just a matter of where and when, not if, was going to feel pretty good, right?
No doubt. You know, there was definitely a couple conversations about that, sitting in the locker room watching today, knowing that we were in, and, you know, last couple of years hoping you could be in. So, you know, just very proud of our guys and the progress that they've made throughout the year. You know, as you mentioned, great senior class, graduated, some, you know, incredible leaders, incredible talent, and you know we've been a work in progress. So you know some high end guys and Sean Byrne, Evan Plunkett, John Sullivan, you know Keegan Tracy, those guys and Gunnar Fellows, they've been playing for us since their freshman year. But you know there were a lot of holes that you know needed to be filled. You know due to you know, that, again, that great senior class, and just really proud of how our guys have continued to develop, and it feels good to be playing some of our best lacrosse at this time of the year.
You mentioned that you have a lot of seniors that have been playing since they were freshmen. That means that they have the experience of an NCAA tournament win under their belt, yet they also have the experience of losing to Penn State in the NCAA tournament, the team yeah. that you're going to be seeing on this coming first round week. I was trying to say Saturday or Sunday, but I haven't committed to memory yet when these games are. When is your game?
Saturday at 2:30.
There you go. Perfect time slot. How do you balance that? What are your thoughts on the combination of, you know, this group has tournament experience and also probably has a little bit of blood in their mouth for their memory of the Nittany Lions?
Yeah, you know, the way I talked about it with them around the Patriot League tournament probably would be very applicable, you know, for the NCAA tournament is you're trying to climb the mountain to the top, right? The championship level, that road gets narrower and narrower. And because it's so narrow, your focus has got to be narrow. So we, you know, I don't think we'll spend 1 minute talking about what happened 3 years ago. And I don't really even know. I haven't watched much of Penn State other than, of course, we scrimmage them every year.
Right.
But I haven't really followed them or watched them. So looking forward to digging in on all of that. And I know they're playing some great lacrosse right now, being the Big Ten champs.
I want to ask about Evan Plunkett because, you know, there are guys that you can feel their presence when it comes to a team, and he's one of them, and it manifests in so many different ways, whether it be effort and physicality in terms of setting a tone, or whether it be in terms of the very unique ability to have the athleticism to make great plays, but also have the prudence to make the right decision, whether it be you know, being aggressive and pushing or pulling back in a transition opportunity or something along those lines. Am I right to just, you know, as an observer, be like, man, number four, he's about as good as it gets?
Yeah, well, you know, you're right on it, and I think when you see the athleticism, you know, the speed and the change of direction, certainly that is that stands out. But he typically is a play ahead. You know, he just has, you know, a great vision, plays with his head up. Unselfish. I don't know the number of assists he has, but I know it's in the mid 30s. And you know, from the midfield position, you know, I think he's got 60 plus points. I'm not, again, somewhere in there. I mean, as a midfielder, you know, and never playing, not somebody who has the letter M by his name, and he's actually an attackman. I mean, he plays midfield, and you know, he has really. You know, he's just such a special player. And, you know, in my opinion, I think he's the best midfielder in the country.
I just want to give you kind of a final opportunity because it really does feel like, I'm not going to use a term like team of destiny or anything along those lines, but a team that really just doesn't like losing. Losing does not sit well with this group, and I feel like that makes a team pretty dangerous in May. How do you assess that vibe that your group gives off?
Yeah, you know, I think when we did go on a little skid in the middle of the year there, I've loved our response to that, and you know, we have been a team that's continued to get better. I mean, I think just, you know, what you've seen in the last couple weeks and what you saw firsthand against Loyola, you know, that's much better than what we were even in February when we were winning games. So, yeah, I think there's a good mix with these guys. I mean, it is, guys who play with a great deal of joy. The locker room is awesome. They're it's such an upbeat feel to them, and they do play with great energy and great determination, and it's going to take all that and then some, and as we take on a really good Penn State team.
Joel Parrici, as always, appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. It's a joy to connect, and congratulations again on your team advancing in the NCAA tournament.
Thank you, Terry. I appreciate it.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Yale head coach Andy Shea, whose Bulldogs are heading back to the NCAA tournament. The last team in off of the at-large bubble. Coach Shea, I can only imagine what that meant for your Saturday and Sunday as you awaited the finality of the committee's selection. How do you describe the feeling?
I mean, it's just relief. Just ecstatic. Very, very happy for these kids. They worked very hard. It's something I did not expect from this team in September. And, you know, that's probably a good thing. We pushed them the whole way. But you kept telling me that I need to wait to see how it plays out. So you're right.
I mean, they're numbers. It's a logic test. It's not like that hard. Now, granted, the numbers change very dynamically, and sometimes the wind can blow in your face. But that wasn't the case on Sunday, particularly because after some of Saturday's results, it became clear that one of the best case scenarios for Yale was for Cornell to climb into the top five of the RPI, which the easiest pathway to do was to beat Princeton in the Ivy League championship. That did not happen, but the other three results were what you needed in order for the Big Red to end up as a top five win. And I think that when it came to analyzing your resume against Maryland's, that ended up proving to be very important. But with all of that said, not your job, just reflecting back on, you know, now we have clarity that Princeton is the number one seed. They've been deemed to have the best resume in college lacrosse. And on two separate occasions, you took them to the absolute limit, an 11-10 regular season loss at home on March 14th, and then a 12-10 Ivy League semifinal loss on Friday. Obviously, you didn't come out on top in either of those contests, but what do you feel like you learned about your team in each of those games?
Well, I think in those games, honestly, I barely remember the one in March relative to this last one, but I just think they made more experienced plays, and our youth, while they've grown up a lot, they're still younger than a lot of their guys. We failed five clears, and you know, we screwed up in transition, and a lot of times it was guys maybe playing in a big moment. So we feel like those moments slipped through our fingers a little bit against them, and give credit to them. They capitalized when that happened, and that was the separator. So, luckily we have another game, so we can hopefully learn from it and continue to get better. And this team has done that when they've been exposed. They've shored up those holes and moved on. So Princeton exposed a few more. So we gotta hopefully fix that stuff.
You kind of set me up for where I wanted to go next perfectly, because if you're struggling to remember March 14th, you're probably really struggling to remember February 14th, which was your opener against Army. And you jumped out to a 6-2 lead, and then they responded by scoring 10 straight goals. And that was in the context of, you know, Princeton losing to Penn State and a couple of these other teams that had two or three games under their belt taking on teams that were playing their first game. So then you turn around with a 15-9 win over another NCAA tournament team in Marist, and then an even more impressive 16-11 win over BU, and then a 17-7 setback against Penn State. And that was the moment for me where I thought, all right, I can see the progress, but I don't think this team has it this year. I think that they're going to take a little bit more seasoning. You respond with, let's call it like a little bit of an underwhelming performance against Fairfield, and then that Princeton game that we talked about. That's when the progress really started to manifest, and ultimately on March 28th, you get a win over Cornell. So through that lens, through that six-week lens, how do you describe and why do you feel like this team was capable of improving at such a rapid rate?
First of all, I think that when you're really young, you lay down, bigger bricks, and you improve faster. You know what I mean? I think that probably tapers as you get a little bit older, and the improvements that you can make in the college game are probably a little smaller. But You know, they were receptive. I think the staff has been phenomenal, to say the least. The guys worked hard. They never, you know, even when we were 3-4, it never felt like it was there was dread, you know what I mean, like in the locker room or anything else. And, you know, I've had a strange feeling about this team all year. My wife reminded me about it this morning. She's like, you mentioned it like 6 months ago. So I don't know. They've been really receptive. And, you know, I didn't know if we would go up to Cornell and beat them, but obviously that happened. And I think in that moment it was like, okay, it just becomes a confidence thing, I feel like, and that they think they can do it. You know, that helps you. And I think that helped us a couple weeks later against Harvard. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun to watch them grow. And, you know, they really love the practice, which is a, you know, obviously a pretty big prerequisite, I guess.
You're a Cortland guy. You played at Lemoyne. You understand the dome more than or better than many. And you get an opportunity to continue your season there 5 p.m. on Sunday against the Orange. What are your thoughts?
Well, first things first, they changed the backdrop of the seats, which is I don't know what effect that has, but you know, when it was silver, it was very tricky for goalies that had never seen it before. You can't hear a thing in there. I remember that. You know, it's a home field advantage, probably stronger than anyone in Division One. So, you know, it's hard to just say, do the Hoosiers thing and measure the rim and measure the baseline and say it's just like any other field. It's not. So, it's a big cement tent, and you know, you got to try and block that out and you know, just play your game. So,
the
you know, I've been in there enough to know it's not nothing.
I don't expect you to remember this, but there was a college basketball coach back in the day who talked about how Duke was on more than Leave It to Beaver reruns. And the same is also true for Syracuse men's lacrosse. So, you know, while I understand that you haven't played them this season, I'm quite confident that you've seen them, if not actually studied their film. What do you know about them, and how excited are you for the opportunity to take on Gary Gay's team?
I was actually saying this. I have not studied them at all. I have seen them a lot, but it's funny, as a college coach, you don't get that much time to watch lacrosse, you know, as a fan. So I watched them a little bit early in the year. They played BU. We have a couple common opponents. You know, I know enough to know because they're omnipresent on social media and all that stuff, but I have yet to – I was talking with staff about it a little bit ago. We have yet to dive in and really dissect it and figure out what they do and what their, you know, strengths and weaknesses, if any, are. So actually looking forward to it. I'm getting home at my house right now about 11:20. I'm probably going to watch a game or two, just a game, just to, you know, crack the seal.
There you go. Well, we don't want to hold you up. Andy Shea, really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congrats again. Can't wait to see this team's continued improvement as you head to the Dome.
Thanks, buddy.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.